so right, just like that. You pull out the tie that you have, like a charm that even wizards can't explain.
Welcome back to Fanacheck. This is S5E2. Very excited about this. So in my season 5 premiere, I had a guest join me and I discussed the merits of Teen Wolf. You know, now if you've seen Teen Wolf, you get it. If you haven't seen it, go see it. I think you'll enjoy this next couple of episodes a little bit more if you've seen Teen Wolf. Although I've tried to make it enjoyable for those who have not yet seen the 1985 Michael J. Fox classic Teen Wolf. But look, I am not out here trying to contend that it is a great movie. My thoughts on Teen Wolf is that it's problematic. It's a cheap, you know, quickly thrown together film from the 80s starring an up and coming Michael J. Fox. But my issue is I think it should be held in higher regard. I think its place in 80s movie history, 80s teen movie history specifically, I don't know. It's kind of a joke, and it's actually a lot better than a lot of other 80s teen movies. I think it made a lot more money than a lot of them. And so I've really been breaking it down. I don't think it's the story. I think the story's great. It's simple. It's, a coming of age tale with some sports in it, some bullies in it, a werewolf in it, some romance in it. And a guy has an epiphany and he ends the movie as a better person, right? I think the marketing was great. I think the marketing couldn't have been better. I mean, they filmed it before Back to the Future, had the wherewithal to let Back to the Future come out first so they could ride his coattails. And that's probably why Teen Wolf was the 27th highest grossing film that year out of over 200 theatrical releases. Again, as I said last time, it made more money than Weird Science, than The Color Purple, than Amadeus, than lots of movies, you know? But it's not really about that. Again, it's place in history. I don't think it gets the respect it deserves. And then I started looking at the cast, all right? Because I get the story and I get to, the marketing, like I said. And look, a lot of the 80s tropes maybe haven't aged as well. But I think I found the issue here with this movie. And one single change could have made it better. Because the cast is nearly perfect, right? Michael J. Fox is the only really name actor in it. I thought he was fantastic. I thought Pamela was perfectly cast. Sexy girl, looked like she had resting bitch face, right? And you don't want a name actor in that role, especially in the 80s. No young lady is going to want to take on that highly unlikable role. That lady had no redeeming qualities. She wasn't like a slutty girl or a mean girl who at the end realized errors of her ways. She was still a piece of shit at the end. So it's not a likable role. Perfect that you have a no-namer in it. The best friend, Styles, I think carries the movie. That guy's great. Chubby's great. I thought the dad was great. That dad, you almost want to be your dad. Coach Finstock, that guy was perfect, right? The one character that if we replace it with someone better, I think makes this movie more memorable and creates an entirely new legacy for the movie, and that is the character of Boof, portrayed by Susan Ercity, right? So Boof is Scott's equally average childhood friend who by the end of the film escapes the friend zone and ends up in the loving arms of our protagonist, Scott Howard, right? There's just no other way to say it. Boof is a problem. Boof is the problem. So let's start with the name Boof. What the fuck? Like I said last week, I get it. I understand people have nicknames. And as I said last time, you know, I have a friend named Bink. And the story there is that when he was little, his baby sister couldn't say Brent. His name is Brent. She couldn't say Brent. She said Bink. So people calling him Bink. And now he goes by Bink. And the reason I'm okay with this big 200-pound muscular dude asking to be called Bink is because it comes with a fucking explanation. Boof, they never explain it. As a matter of fact, I think when you Google the character, it's Lisa something. So it's not even like Beth or like there's no story of like, my name is Beth, but when I was little, I couldn't say Beth. I said Boof. I don't know. They never explain that. And that's fucking stupid, right? Plus, here's the thing. History has not been kind to the name Boof, the way Boof had been history has been kind to the history of Teen Wolf, quite frankly. But the Urban Dictionary defines Boof as to abuse an illicit or illicit drug via insertion into one's rectum. Via insertion into one's rectum. Dude, Boof is now a slang term for ingesting drugs through your asshole. And it gets worse. In jail, boofing is when you hide things up your ass. So thanks, Boof. Thanks, Susan Ercity. The other issue with Boof is the actress portraying the character Susan Ercity. She's an issue. I don't want to speak ill of the dead, right? Now, she's not dead, but her career is, right? But this girl has zero pizzazz, right? Now, I get it. This isn't Ginger from fucking Gilligan's Island, right? I understand that she's not supposed to catch every guy's eye. She's supposed to be kind of plain Jane. She's supposed to blend in. It has to, we as an audience have to be understanding of why Scott might overlook her, right? She's a completely opposite of Pamela, okay? But I am not convinced in the least that anyone having just won the big game at the end would push aside Pamela in favor of Boof, right? Except for maybe Scott's dad, but I'll save that opinion for another time, right? Because there's that weird the dad and her, and she seems to like the dad a lot. I don't know. But this kills the end of the movie for me because I'm left feeling like I know what the movie was trying to tell me, but I couldn't buy in. Imagine at the end of When Harry Met Sally, Harry ran through the streets of New York City on New Year's Eve to finally declare his love for a sensible desk chair. Not Meg Ryan, but a desk chair, a piece of furniture that is ergonomically efficient, right? That's what this movie did. And I'm a romantic, and Teen Wolf's ending left me flat. And again, I think it can be solved by replacing Susan Ercity. So what if we recast Boof? What if we were able to hop into a DeLorean, go back in time, and cast an actor that brought life and maybe a whiff of sexuality to the character of Boof? Well, I don't have a DeLorean, okay? I do have a laptop, though. I have access to IMDb and apparently a whole lot of time because I have put an absorbent amount of time into this. This is either going to be funny and you'll learn something or you'll enjoy it, or it has been a colossal waste of my time because I start off, and I'm not done yet, but I start off with over 400 actresses and I narrowed it down and narrowed it down and narrowed it down. So over the next couple episodes, we'll break down into categories, okay? And what we're going to do here over the next couple episodes is I'm going to throw out some great candidates to replace Boof with in different categories. And eventually it'll culminate in me telling you who Fanacek thinks should have been Boof and how that would have helped the legacy of the movie. Here are the parameters. First, I'm only using actresses that were born between 1955 and 1965. Boof, Susan Ercity, was born in 1957, making her 27 while filming. It was too old in my opinion, but it was the 80s. And in the 80s, apparently, I get that they had to be 18, because the problem with casting someone under the age of 18 is they can only work a certain amount of hours every day, they have to go to school. But does she have to be damn near 30? They couldn't have found an 18, 19, 20-year-old for this role. Chubby, he's like in his late 50s. The guy at Mick, Jesus, I think his grandkids were on set with him. So that's it. So she was born in 57 is what it is. So I'm going to stay within those parameters. So again, born between 55 and 65. Also, I want them to be working actors as of 1984 when the Teen Wolf casting process began. So if they have nothing on their IMDb before 1985, they're not going to fall into, if they're born before 55 or after 65, they won't fall into the category. So don't hit me up with all the actresses that you think I missed. Trust me, I probably didn't miss them. They just didn't fit the damn priority and parameters. And I'm going to break a couple of my own rules anyway. I'm also going to characterize the different actresses based on where they were in their careers and what impact and changes their presence would have made to both the movie itself and its legacy. So buckle up. It's going to be a lot of fun. So either this is really useful stuff or, again, colossal waste of time. But our first category is one of my favorites. It is the Blast from the Past category. Why not take a known actor from the past and resurrect their career via the role of Boof? Right? It brings an instant credibility to the role, maybe some prestige to the film, and the actor will likely bring along their fans who otherwise might not have watched Teen Wolf. Former TV stars might jump at the opportunity, right, to do a feature alongside the star Family Ties. I'm just saying, okay? And as an added bonus, if they are a has-been, you can probably get them for the bargain bin price, right, of scale. So I've identified some solid matches. And again, I think this is the only role in the movie, before we do this, Boof is the only role where I think if you put a name actor in or someone who became a name actor, it dramatically helps the film. I don't think any other character really needs it. So our first Blast from the Past, Linda Blair, born in 1959. You know her from the projectile vomiting little girl Reagan in The Exorcist, okay? By the time they began filming Teen Wolf, Linda Blair had already been acting for 16 years. I mean, shit, she's clearly a has-been by 1982 when she did guest spots on both Fantasy Island and The Love Boat. Now, to be fair, Michael J. Fox did a Love Boat spot during this time as well. Also, actors like Courtney Cox and Tom Hanks. But guesting on those shows typically meant your career was either on the rise or on the decline. Guess which camp Linda Blair was in, right? On the decline. But again, as a veteran actor, she would show up on the Teen Wolf set, be professional as shit, and super appreciative not to be the fourth lead in a straight-to-video TNA horror flick, which, by the way, that's what she was doing at this time. So her look for the role is great. The 80s were a decade in which she was trying hard to be a sex symbol, but falling just a little bit short. So I think it's a good match. So Linda Blair is my first candidate from the Blast from the Past category. My next Blast from the Past, Dana Plato. Well, like this one. Born in 1964, you know her as Kimberly on Different Strokes. The timing would be perfect for Dana Plato. Teen Wolf's release date is right before the airing of Dana's final three episodes of Different Strokes, right? So she's clearly done filming Different Strokes. Her last three episodes are about to come out when Teen Wolf comes out. She'd largely been written off of Different Strokes towards the end because she had a baby in real life. And you know, how great would it, I don't think they wanted a pregnant Kimberly. Does not fit into the ilk of that show, right? So how great would it be for her to transform from our living room right into our movie theaters alongside Michael J. Fox? Also, I'm guessing she and Michael J. Fox ran in the same circles, given that, like, Dana had worked with both he and his ex, Nancy McKeon, in that TV movie High School USA. The added bonus about casting Dana is that in later years, she would make headlines for things like softcore lesbian porn, Playboy pictorials, robbing a Las Vegas video store, suicide, sad to say. With any luck, each headline could have started with Teen Wolf's boof, Rob's video store. Teen Wolf's boof, found dead in her trailer. It's awful, but it would have led to a few more rentals and or streamings, you know what I mean? And maybe provide a little resurgence for the movie. So here's to hoping. So that's Dana Plato. Next up in the Blast from the Past category, Marie Osmond. Born 1959. She's one of like the 103 fucking Osmond siblings. I don't know how many there are. Admittedly, I don't know a whole hell of a lot about the Osmonds. I really don't. Nor do I care. That said, they were a big deal in the 70s, and that last name meant a lot to a lot of folks, particularly in the Mormons, right? Now, by the time they began filming Teen Wolf, she was a fixture on TV specials, talk shows, stuff like that. But she wasn't really relevant. Her acting career had stalled. Like Dana Plato, she had just guested on The Love Boat. Appearing in a teen comedy alongside Michael J. Fox would have been a boost to her. And to be fair to her, she would have added a lot of buzz to the project, quite frankly. Also, her look is solid for the role. She was super cute, but never too sexy. Kind of like a Linda Ronstadt, right? Ooh, Linda Ronstadt. Wonder when she was born. I might add her to the list in a later category. Marie Osmond had that kind of look. Again, cute, but not sexy. And again, probably because she was Mormon, right? So that is Marie Osmond. Now, Erin Murphy is the next one up. Born in 1964. Erin was Tabitha Stevens on Bewitched, right? Now, this is an odd choice, but come on, picture it. The articles write themselves. From witches to werewolves, Erin Murphy makes her triumphant return to acting in her big screen debut. Erin hadn't acted like since the 70s, so I'm guessing her acting chops wouldn't have been terribly sharp, but it's not like old Susan or City was hitting it out of the park either, so I'm fine with it. The bonus with Erin is that I'm guessing you could have gotten her for scale, right? Or maybe even in exchange for a few bagels from the craft service table, because she wasn't doing shit in the acting world. So that's Erin Murphy. Next up, this is an outside-the-box one, but I'm proud of this one. I'm actually proud of all of them. If you listen to the show, you've probably guessed, I'm always a little bit proud of myself. So this next one's good. Simonetta Stefanelli, born 1954. You don't know who she is, but you've seen her work. She was Michael Corleone's first wife, Apollonia, in The Godfather. Now he goes and he kills that police captain and they have to slip him out to Italy for a few years to hide. While he's there, he marries that young girl, Apollonia, right? So I broke my own age range rule here because she was born before 1955. She's born in 1954, but how great would this be? Although steadily working in Italy, no one in America had seen her since Michael's car got blown to shit, right? So the promotions would be awesome, and I'm guessing it would pull in a good chunk of the millions of Godfather fans, right? Of course, this would require a rewrite. But that would be simple. You have to add like one line like, "Boof, we've been best friends ever since your family moved here from Italy in second grade," right? And I think you'd also have to throw in a line or two to explain why her English still fucking sucks. But yeah, I think she might be a touch too good looking, but it's nothing a Boof haircut couldn't do, right? Give her a $6 haircut like Scott's getting. That's a reference to Teen Wolf. And I think she might be a good fit. Again, maybe a little too pretty, but Simonetta Stefanelli, I'm proud of that one. The next one, this wasn't a kind of a no-brainer. I would have been remiss if I didn't throw this one in there. The entire Brady Bunch trio, right? Maureen McCormick, born in 1956, that was Marcia. Eve Plum, 1958, that was Jan Brady. Susan Olsen, born in 1961, Cindy Brady. Come on, this works. This works. All three are icons who had been on an iconic show, and quite frankly, all three had nothing but time on their hands, right? The Brady Bunch had been off the air since 74, but these three sirens kept popping up in variety hours, spin-offs, specials, etc., right? Sherwood Schwartz was going to squeeze every fucking possible nickel out of the Brady Bunch franchise, apparently, even well into the 90s when he made those movies, okay? Coincidentally, he's the guy who created Gilligan's Island too, which I referenced earlier. It all comes together on Fanachek. Okay, let's break this down like the porridge in Goldilocks, okay? Goldilocks and Three Bears. All right, first up is Maureen McCormick. She's too hot. A little too hot, the porridge, right? Literally, she's too hot. Marcia Brady was the most famous of the three characters, and whether you found her attractive or not, her perceived hotness, right, had been drilled into the zeitgeist for years. She could probably pull off Boof, but I'm guessing she would be distracting. By 1984, she had guested on tons of shows, including, well, here you go, 6 episodes of each of Fantasy Island and The Love Boat. That's not good. Her movie career had failed to launch, so Teen Wolf would have been a real coup for her, I think. Unfortunately, I think the character of Marcia would have loomed too large. Then there's Susan Olsen. Her porridge, she's too cold. She only has 2 acting credits in the 80s, and one is an episode of Divorce Court, which made me laugh. I mean, you forget that that was a scripted show. As a kid, I didn't realize that. I was left home a lot. Oh my Lord, I watched a lot of television as a kid, and I remember watching Divorce Court, and maybe I just was too willing to suspend disbelief, or maybe I was a bit of a dope, but I never realized that Divorce Court was scripted until way later, so that's embarrassing. Right, anyway, so again, she only had these 2 acting credits in the 80s. One was an episode of Divorce Court, which I'm not even sure is like a SAG after production. Her name was never as recognizable as the others. Also, she looked at least like the least like her Brady Bunch days, given her young age when the show debuted, meaning I don't even think you could capitalize on the look because she was so young in Brady Bunch that by the time Teen Wolf came around, the adult version of her did not at all look the same. Most Teen Wolf viewers would have to be constantly reminded, I think, that she'd been Cindy Brady, therefore losing the whole name recognition thing. Eve Plum, her porch, she's just right, man. She played an iconic character, and although attractive, she was never the it girl like her older TV sister, right? It was always Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. Out of the three, Eve is the most boofish in that, is that a word? I'm making that up. She's the most boofish in that she was always competing for attention against more attractive women. Of the TV sisters, Eve easily has the coolest pre-Brady Bunch resume anyway. She did The Virginians, Mannix, Lancer, Gunsmoke, a ton of other iconic shows. Sadly, her relevancy went the way of the dodo after the series ended, honestly making Teen Wolf kind of an oasis in the desert that was now her career. Oh, I'm a poet. Okay. Not going to lie, I'd pay a few bucks to see a version of Teen Wolf where Eve is Boof, Maureen is Pamela, maybe Robert Reed can play Scott's dad, and B. Davis comes back as Coach Finstock. Fuck it, recast the whole damn movie with the Brady Bunch. Whole different movie, but it probably makes a little more money. But then again, it'll probably be a made-for-TV movie at that point. Anyway, that is the Brady Bunch trio. Now, we're winding down. Another group here, though, for this blast from the past, the Young Ladies of Walnut Grove. If you don't know Walnut Grove, that was the town, fictional town in the movie or the TV series Little House on the Prairie. And they are Melissa Gilbert, 1962. Melissa Sue Anderson, also born in 1962. Allison Arngrim, born in 1962. Excuse me. So, Melissa Gilbert, of course, was Laura Ingalls. Melissa Sue Anderson was her older sister, Mary, who eventually became blind. And then you had Allison Ingram was Nellie Olson. She was the antagonist of the show, the mean little blonde-haired girl who eventually became the nice girl as they got older. Okay. Now, wouldn't it be nice to see these ladies in some modern garb and playing 2 Minutes in Heaven with a werewolf? I think it could at least be intriguing. Little House went off the air in 1983, and although working fairly consistently, none of these ladies were exactly lighting the world on fire, okay? So Teen Wolf would have been like an upgrade to their existing resumes. Let's do another round of Goldilocks, right? But this time we'll use the beds instead of the porridge. Allison Arngrim, her bed's too hard, She's too hard. Nellie Olson was a world-class biatch on that show, and it was always hard to see her real-life counterpart like any other way, because Alison Arngrim's still around. Matter of fact, Scott, interesting side note, Scott Michaels owns a company. I got to meet him. I got to know him pretty well in L.A. He owned a company called Dearly Departed Tours, where they would take you on these tours of Hollywood, showing where famous people lived, died, that kind of thing. They even had Manson tours where you could see all the murder sites and where the weapon was found and all that kind of stuff. And I did all those tours. He ended up being a consultant on arguably my favorite film of all time, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But he was friends with Alison Arngrim, and she would do tours with him as well. I don't know what they were about, but I know like she would run tours with his company. Maybe they went, it's like Malibu Canyon to Little House sites. I don't know. But anyway, Alison Arngrim's been around, but she's always been seen as Nellie. And again, Nellie wasn't likable. And even though Alison Arngrim seems likable, people don't seem to like her. Anyway, she's the least experienced of the three. She also worked the least after the show's finale. She only worked like once, I think, between 1983 and 2001. And it was a music video. Oddly enough, she too was a veteran of both Fantasy Island and The Love Boat. So there was a lot of that. Regardless of her credits, so Alison has a more of a pain in the ass sister vibe than earnest, innocent love interest vibe. She'd be better suited to play Ferris Bueller's sister Jeannie, quite frankly, than anything else. So Alison Arngrim, not the best fit. Let's move on to Melissa Sue Anderson. Her bed, she's a little too soft. Melissa Sue is very pretty and maybe a little too angelic. It would almost be too hard to understand why Scott hadn't started the movie with a big old crush on Boof, right? Melissa Sue Anderson is the kind of girl in high school you have a crush on. She's beautiful. She seems like she'd be nice. She's probably the pretty girl who dates the nerdy kid. I mean, she's awesome, right? At the time of Teen Wolf's filming, Melissa Sue Anderson was easily the most experienced actor of the Little House bunch. Her resume included Bewitched, The Brady Bunch, Shaft, the series, Chips, and of course, fucking Fantasy Island and The Love Boat. She also consistently worked in the decades following the show, but never in any star-making vehicles. So again, I don't think she's a solid fit for Boof. That said, she's proven to be quite competent at playing a blind girl because her character went blind in Little House on the Prairie. It does beg the question, could we do a little rewrite and make Boof blind? Right? Maybe make Scott could serve as her seeing eye wolf. Right? Hello, is this thing on? Seeing eye wolf, what? Well, I don't write all my own jokes. Change the title to Blind Man's Boof. How about that one? Audience? Blind Man's Boof? Anyone? All right. Color me intrigued, but she's not the right fit. Now we move on to our final Little House girl, Melissa Gilbert. Her bed is just right. Okay. She was the real star of Little House. No offense to Michael Landon and his big fucking hair. She was easily the most famous of the three. And she also has the best Boof look. Brunette, cute, not too sexy. The best part about Melissa Gilbert, though, is her personal life in the 80s. She was like what I would call Brat Pack adjacent. Check this out. She was engaged to both Emilio Estevez and Rob Lowe in the 80s. I mean, how great is that? Not at the same time, or maybe at the same time. I don't fucking know, but she was engaged to both of them. Also, she briefly dated a young Tom Cruise. Right? So imagine the set of Teen Wolf with these dudes stopping by. It elevates the mystique and the buzz of the film. Maybe one of them could have been talked into a cameo. I'm thinking Cruise could have been played like an opposing basketball player. We all know the son of a bitch loves to run in movies, right? Maybe plays a basketball player. And you might laugh, but he later did a cameo in Young Guns in 1988 after he was way more famous at that point. You can look that shit up. So he wasn't opposed to doing cameos with his buddy Emilio Estevez. So anyhow, that wraps up the ladies of Little House. Let's do another little group of women here to wrap up, to almost wrap up our Blast from the Past section. And that is the Little Darlings. I love this movie. 1980 classic movie. The Little Darlings are Tatum O'Neill, born in 1963, and Christy McNichol, born in 1962. If you haven't seen the movie Little Darlings, here's the synopsis. Two 15-year-old girls from different sides of the tracks compete to see who will be the first to lose their virginity while at summer camp. I have two daughters. Kill me now. What the fuck? It's actually a great movie, but as a father of two little girls now, I'm like, what the fuck, man? Let's start with Tatum O'Neill. She was the youngest Oscar winner of all time. That's her. The youngest Oscar winner of all time, Tatum O'Neill, to be exact, if you want to talk about her. She won Best Supporting Actress for Paper Moon in 1973. But I don't like it. Describing her as an Oscar winner is kind of like calling Roseanne a former presidential candidate. I mean, it's technically true, but come on. Right, I don't want to take anything away from Tatum O'Neill, but the rumor has long been that Paper Moon's director Peter Bogdanovich pulled that performance out of the kid. Right, so she would follow it up though with another solid performance in The Bad News Bears. I'll give her that, and then she slowly would slide into a kind of a shit show of a life. I mean, and who can blame her? Her dad was Ryan O'Neill, fucking psycho dad. But anyway, I digress. This is about Boof. We can shit talk the O'Neills another time. By 84, Tatum O'Neill's movie career has stalled. Okay, the rest of the 80s would be pretty disastrous for her. So casting Tatum O'Neill could be a huge win-win for both she and the movie. Imagine the trailer, poster, and VHS box. Emmy nominee Michael J. Fox and Academy Award winner Tatum O'Neill star in the movie that will have you howling in the aisle. Howling in the aisle. That was all me, guys. That was all me. Anyway, the Howling in the Aisle, very proud of that. You can see the credibility, though, it brings to the movie. That said, viewers will be about 3 minutes into it before they realize that this movie isn't going to be winning any damn awards. So, I don't know. They might be mad. I think Tatum's look kind of works, but she has what my mother-in-law calls puss face. She often plays bitches for a reason, I think. But maybe a bitchy Boof is the kick in the ass Scott needs, right? Maybe if Boof was a little bit bitchier, he wouldn't have been so damn rude. Now let's discuss Christy McNichol. Miss McNichol, if you're nasty, right? This is a tricky one because Christy's career was going pretty well at this point. It would start to lose steam around 86, but then she'd land the Golden Girls spinoff series Empty Nest in 1988, and that would be a pretty big show until its finale in 1995. So at this time, this would have been a weird time for her. A little backstory on Christy McNichol. She was a very successful child actor. As a tween, she was guesting on cool shows like Love American Style, The Bionic Woman, Love Boat 2, actually Love Boat 2, which is the second of the three Love Boat pilots. So that's a whole other conversation. Christy landed a series regular role on the hit show Family alongside, interestingly, Michael J. Fox's future TV mom, Meredith Baxter, or Meredith Baxter Burney. I don't know when the Burney came and went, but they played siblings on Family. Family would last 86 episodes until 1980, at which point Christy would start pumping out two or three movies a year. Okay. So, I don't know. Casting director should have pursued her. But I think it would have been in her best interest to pass on a Teen Wolf. So I got a couple of honorable mentions before we wrap up the blast from the past. And that is the Cooper sisters from One Day at a Time, man. Mackenzie Phillips, born in 1959. Valerie Bertinelli, born in 1960. This is going to be short and sweet. Mackenzie Phillips at that time was a fucking mess, okay? Valerie Bertinelli was too hot. She was too hot, too popular, too fucking married to Eddie Van Halen. So we can't even have this conversation. So the award for best blast from the past version of Boof goes to, again, let's scroll through here. Who did I have listed? We had a bunch. We had Linda Blair, Dana Plato, Marie Osmond, Erin Murphy, Simona Stefanelli, Maureen McCormick, Eve Plum, Susan Olsen, Melissa Gilbert, Melissa Sue Anderson, Alison Arngrim. Who else here? I'm scrolling through. Tatum O'Neill, Christy McNichol was on my list. I'm giving it to Melissa Gilbert. So Melissa Gilbert, congratulations. We're going to see you when we come back for a finalist tournament at the end of all this to kind of pick all our finalists from each section. So Melissa Gilbert, I think, is the best of the blasts from the past. Now, the next category is simply called similar but better. Similar vibe but better, right? The next group of young ladies, they have a similar look to Susan or City, but are simply better. I don't know. I can't explain it. Maybe they're a little cuter or funnier or have a fucking personality or whatever it is. These actors would each make a better Boof. First up, Dana Delaney. Dana Delaney, all right, born in 1956. She was known from China Beach and getting naked in the movie Exit to Eden, which we'll talk about. I love Dana Delaney. I was a fan of China Beach as a young man, and I remember developing a bit of a crush on her character. But I have an experiment that I think proves she'd make a good Boof. And here it goes. For all of you who know Dana Delaney, do this for me. Describe Dana Delaney. Take your time. Describe her. It's tough, right? I mean, she's brunette. She's attractive. I wouldn't call her cute or sexy. Dana Delaney's bordering on nondescript, kind of plain Jane, but she's hot. She's fun. She even seems a little bit dangerous. She's Boof with an X factor, right? Let's look at her career at the time. She's been working steadily since 78, doing small roles and film and TV. In 84, the year they are filming and casting Teen Wolf, she appears in three movies I've never heard of, two of which are TV movies. So my guess is that she would have jumped to the chance to get her Boof on, right? Her later success would only shine a light on what could have been like basically her breakout role in Teen Wolf, right? And then she gets China Beach and she'll be, hey, Teen Wolf's Boof is now in China Beach. So again, with later success comes more positive attention for the movie Teen Wolf. Interesting side note though. Dana would go on to star in the 1994 shitfest comedy Exit to Eden. This film had an interesting marketing campaign because I vividly remember the early commercials and later VHS box and poster featuring Rosie O'Donnell and Dan Aykroyd in dominatrix gear. I'm going to repeat that. Rosie O'Donnell and Dan Aykroyd in dominatrix gear, tight, black, latex and chains. Who the hell wants to see that? I'm not sure which one was less attractive, Rosie or Dan. Now, I'm guessing, right? I'm guessing the studio was receiving less than enthusiastic levels of anticipation for the film because all of a sudden, all anyone could talk about was the fact that Dana Delaney would be doing a full frontal nude scene in the movie, full frontal nude. And I'm talking about Entertainment Weekly, Entertainment Tonight. I'm not talking about word on the street. There was no internet back then. I mean, well, I guess there might have been. I sure as fuck didn't have it. Not in 1994. So again, the movie had not come out yet, but everyone was talking about this nude scene. Now, admittedly, I saw this movie for the promise of the nude scene, right? So I guess this campaign worked. The movie still sucked, though, okay? A similar campaign, though, was used for 2018's Red Sparrow, starring Jennifer Lawrence. Apparently, J-Law gets naked in it, but I was in my 40s at that point and didn't need to drop, you know, $12 to see some boobs. In a weird twist, though, I likely would have seen Red Sparrow had they hinted at a Rosie O'Donnell dominatrix scene, so life comes full circle, because now in my 40s, I'd be interested in seeing Rosie O'Donnell do dominatrix stuff. So anyhow, that is Dana Delaney. You're welcome for that. Next up in my similar but better is Daphne Zuniga. This is a good pick. So she's born in 1962. She's really known for Spaceballs and Melrose Place, right? Spaceballs for some people, probably Melrose Place for others. And nary the two should meet, I'm guessing. Two different fan bases. Okay. Guess what Daphne Zuniga did in 1984? She appeared in two episodes of Family Ties. Guess who she played? She played Michael J. Fox's love interest. Guess how she's described in the synopsis? Unassuming. Guess whose career took off in 1985 and then again it exploded in 1987? Daphne's, right? So boom, mic drop, right? Here's how the scenario should have played out. She works with Michael J. Fox for a few weeks in 84 on Family Ties. He mentions Teen Wolf. She mentions it to her agents, right? Her agent calls the casting director and easily gets her an audition. She does the movie. It comes out in 1985, the same year she stars in The Sure Thing with John Cusack. 2 years later, she does Spaceballs. People ask, who is playing the Princess Leia character in Spaceballs? To which other people respond, oh, that's Boo from Teen Wolf. I haven't seen Teen Wolf, the person says. I'll run it right now to my local mom and pop video store and rent it. Teen Wolf gets a VHS resurgence and people declare it an 80s classic. 5 years later, she joins the cast of the hit series Melrose Place, prompting viewers to ask, where do I know this new girl from? She was Boof in Teen Wolf. Oh, I haven't seen Teen Wolf yet. I'll run out to my Blockbuster and rent it right now. This results in yet another resurgence, and this time it cements Teen Wolf as an 80s classic. Life should be written by Fanacek. That's how that should have happened. Interesting side note, Daphne would later work with Doug Savant on Melrose Place. Look closely, and you'll see that Doug Savant was number 23 on Scott's basketball team, the Beavers. But you got to be real Fanacek-y to notice that kind of shit. Anyway, okay, there you go. She's a good choice of Daphne Zuniga. I'm very proud of that one. Next up in my similar vibe, but better, is Cynthia Gibb. Oh, I love Cynthia Gibb. She's born in 1963. Really known for two major things, Fame, the TV series, and arguably the best hockey movie ever made, Youngblood. So growing up, I often watched TV movies and miniseries with my grandmother. I have vivid memories of Liberace, Hemingway, and of course, the Karen Carpenter story starring Cynthia Gibb. Cynthia will always be my introduction to both the Carpenters and eating disorders. So I'm sure she's proud of that. She's out there somewhere like, hey, that guy Fanacek, he learned about the Carpenters and bulimia because of me. So there you go. By the way, that's how Karen Carpenter died, in case anyone didn't know. So Cynthia Gibb's career in the 80s is perfect fit for the role of Boof, right? By 1984, she was already a TV veteran, having appeared in 172 episodes of the soap opera Search for Tomorrow between 81 and 83. From there, she launched right into the TV series Fame, which was based on that the 1980 hit movie, right, with the same name. Cynthia would appear in 56 episodes of that show from 83 to 87. So let's break this down. She's young, pretty TV veteran, who is currently like the fifth lead on a hit show. This is perfect for Boof, right? Plus, in 1986, she would appear in a kick-ass hockey movie alongside Rob Lowe and Patrick Swayze. And if you look closely, a glorified extra, the goalie, was a very, very young, unknown Keanu Reeves, right? Cynthia is still working today, but has never had like a role that defines her. She's like kind of doing Lifetime stuff and things like that. Wouldn't it be great, though, if Boof became her defining role? right? It could have been a decades of entertainment reporters saying things like, you may know her as Boo from Teen Wolf, but now she's in this shitty Lifetime movie. I don't know. The only thing we ever hear about Susan or City is nothing. So I think anyone who could bring any kind of attention back to Teen Wolf is great. And I don't know what Susan or City does now. But that's Cynthia Gibb. I think that's a strong pick. This next one. A little too on the nose, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it. Gabrielle Carteris, right? Born 1961. You know her as Andrea Zuckerman from Beverly Hills 90210. Gabrielle sliding into this on a technicality because she apparently appeared in a 1984 episode of the soap opera Another World. After this, though, she didn't really start working until 1987. But because that credit's there, I'm allowing her to enter. I like Gabrielle's move because she basically played the same role in 90210, right? Andrea Zuckerman was the cute girl in glasses that was always pining after Brandon as he went off and chased every other damn girl in the school, except for her. She's a natural born boof, right? Her later success on the juggernaut that 90210 would turn out to be would have surely elevated the relevance of Teen Wolf, right? She had a doll made out of her 90210 character. She had a fucking doll. Now, imagine all the Teen Wolf fans who could buy the Andrea doll, remove the glasses, cut the hair, and be left with a boof doll. Right? A DIY boof doll. You laugh. But you know there are crazy fuckers who would have done it. And I'm the kind of guy who would have been on fucking eBay buying it, right? So it's a DIY boof doll. Look, it's on my shelf next to my Hal Needham doll and my Telly Savalas autographed black and white 8x10. That's my impression of me. Anyway, Gabrielle Carteris, I don't know. Take it or not. I'm serving it to you on a platter. If you're hungry, you can eat it. Okay. Next up in the similar vibe but better. Elizabeth McGovern. Born 1961. She's kind of been all over the place. Ragtime, Once Upon a Time in America. She's having a baby. Later on, she was in Downton Abbey. She was the mom. I have to admit, I never really got Elizabeth McGovern. She always seemed so blah to me, like bordering on no personality. But then again, it is Boof we're talking about, so fuck it, why not? Here's the thing about Elizabeth McGovern. They likely could not have afforded her. By 1984, she's coming off a really prestigious run. 1980, she does Ordinary People. 1981, Ragtime. 1984, Once Upon a Time in America. I doubt she would have felt compelled to play Boof for the low price of scale. That said, her look is great, and I think she would have brought a poutiness to the role that would have lent itself to Scott's constant rejection. Plus, she was clearly comfortable with nude scenes. I mean, see Ragtime, by the way. Make sure you're alone when you see Ragtime. But there's a really kind of nutty scene in Ragtime. I don't know, a topless boof scene. Why not, right? Topless boof. That surely would have pumped up some rentals. So pumped up more than just that. Okay, next up, Joyce Heiser, 1957. She's known for one thing and one thing only, Just One of the Guys. Full disclaimer, I have never seen any of this woman's work. By all accounts, her sole claim to fame, like I said, is as the lead in the 1985 cult classic, Just One of the Guys. This movie has a huge following. It's a story of a popular high school girl named Terry, who, determined to expose her school's sexism, cuts her hair and poses as a male student for several weeks. This all culminates in a very famous, totally unnecessary scene in which Terry rips her shirt open and exposes her boobs. Right? Now, I worked at a video store in high school, and even in the 90s, this thing was getting rented all the time. I mean, this movie had a following for sure. She looks similar to Susan or City. She's proven she can carry a movie and titillate a generation of adolescent boys. So I don't know. And the big movie came out the same year as Teen Wolf. That helps too. So my only issue with Joyce is that, like Susan or City, she's faded into obscurity, which does nothing to help the legacy of Teen Wolf. That's the only problem. Interesting side note, though, she dated both Bruce Springsteen and Warren Beatty in the 80s, so maybe more working and less star fucking, huh, Joyce? You would have had a career. But anyway, that's that. So that wraps up the similar vibe, but better. I know I do have an honorable mention. Lori Petty, born 1963. You know her from Point Break and A League of Their Own. Good news is she's short enough. Short enough, right? Michael J. Fox is 5'5". Lori Petty's probably like 5 feet tall. So the good news is she's short enough to do it. The bad news is she's too frantic. Lori would have made for an insufferable boof. An insufferable boof. Sounds like a Merchant Ivory film. Oh, hello, I'm Hugh Grant, star of An Insufferable Boof. Anyway, I love myself. Okay, the award for best similar vibe but better version of boof goes to... let's recap. We had Joyce Heiser, we had Elizabeth McGovern, we had Gabrielle Carteris, we had Cynthia Gibb, we had Daphne Zuniga, we had Dana Delaney. Daphne Zuniga, you win. Zuniga, I should say. Zuniga. So Daphne Zuniga wins for the similar vibe, but better. So congratulations, Daphne. We will see you in the finalist tournament. All right, moving on. The next category is called the Ethan Wayne. That's right. This category is called the Ethan Wayne. Let me explain. Oh, that rhymes. So why not just throw in an actress, right, who will work for cheap while also providing a famous last name? It's a common device. I remember as a kid being bombarded with commercials for The New Adam 12. It was a TV show. It starred Ethan Wayne, son of John Wayne. I became very aware of this because they would not shut the fuck up about it, right? What was The New Adam 12 about, you ask? I have no fucking clue. But I do know that John Wayne's son was in it because, again, they wouldn't shut up about it. So let's apply this. Let me shut my blinds here. Let's apply this to the role of Boof. So I'm going to take people who may or may not have been good actors, doesn't matter, but they have name recognition. So first one up is Dee Dee Pfeiffer. Born in 1964, she is the sister of Michelle Pfeiffer. Now, Michelle's little sis didn't start working until 1985, but she came out swinging with 6 credits in her first year, including 2 TV movies, a few TV spots, and 2 theatrical releases, one of which was Moving Violations. And I love that movie. Its marketing relied heavily on the fact that it starred Peter Murray, brother of Bill Murray. Name recognition. It's all connected, okay? So back to Dee Dee. She's worked steadily and was even a lead in ABC's Big Sky, which ran 47 episodes between 2020 and 2023. I never heard of it. 1985 would have been a decent time to trade in on her older sister's success. Michelle, who was 6 years older than Dee Dee, had been working steadily since 1979. Although she wouldn't be a megastar until around 1987, she did have some heat in 1985 because she had just done Grease 2 in 1982, and Scarface in 83. So the name Pfeiffer meant something, and Dee Dee would have lent some buzz to the production. More importantly, as Michelle's fame grew over the years, it would highlight the fact that her sister was Boof and maybe keep Teen Wolf more at the front of people's minds when they visited their local video store. Sadly, though, her look isn't quite right for the role. She comes off a little Kelly Bundy-ish, right? So maybe, though, give her a $6 haircut and some glasses, but I'm thinking the casting directors would have to pass. She's probably a better Pamela, honestly. But that's Dee Dee Pfeiffer. Next up in the Ethan Wayne Award, Tracy Reiner. She's got a lot of connections. She was born in 1964. She's the daughter of Penny Marshall, stepdaughter of Rob Reiner, niece of Gary Marshall. So 3 amazing actors and directors. That's insane. So Tracy Reiner brings new meaning, though, to the phrase, I get by with a little help from my friends. Okay. As of this writing, as of this podcast episode, she has 36 acting credits. Okay. 21 of them are associated with either Penny, Rob, or Gary. 21 out of the 36, right? Another 2, right? One is from Ron Howard, who is a longtime Penny Marshall collaborator, and another one is a Tom Hanks film, and Tom worked with Penny in Big. So that leaves 14 projects that she seemingly landed on her own, although I'm sure the name Reiner probably persuaded more than one director to weave her into his or her movie, right? So this one, she really relies on her name a lot. Tracy's biggest role was as Betty Spaghetti in the 1992 Penny Marshall classic League of Their Own. She has a similar look to Boof. Unfortunately, she is just as forgettable. So maybe casting her in Teen Wolf brings some heat to the film, but I'm guessing it would result in a little more than a Gary Marshall set visit, right? Because I don't think she's doing much more for the movie. Interesting side note, though. If you will, check out the season 8 episode of Laverne and Shirley titled Do the Carmine. So Tracy Reiner is an extra in it. She's dancing, but that's not why you need to watch. This episode is about that character Carmine. So they had a character on the show, Carmine, the Big Ragu Ragusa. They called him the Big Ragu. And they were always trying to shove this guy down our throat. In this episode, he was trying to become a pop star, okay, with a dance. And this particular song and dance is ridiculous, called Do the Carmine, okay? Check it out. The dance is very similar, right? So they're dancing like, do the Carmine. He's up on stage singing. It's the dance, I'm not even kidding. It almost looks similar to what Elaine Bennis did on Seinfeld, like the weird leg kicks and shit. Also, Penny Marshall, although a great actor and director, she should never dance in front of a camera. It's really worth goofing on. So again, season 8, Laverne and Shirley, Do the Carmine. It's on YouTube. It's really funny. That is Tracy Reiner. Next up is another Tracy Nelson. Tracy Nelson, this is a good pick. I'm proud of this one. Born in 1963, lots of family in the industry. She's a sister of Matthew and Gunnar Nelson, the Nelson twins from the 90s. She's a daughter of Ricky Nelson. She's, of course, the granddaughter of Ozzy and Harriet Nelson. Now, I ran into Matthew Nelson and his family at Lowe's several years ago. Matthew and I spoke about mulch. He had a baby with him. His baby's name was Ozzy. It was fascinating. But enough about my glamorous home improvement exploits. This is about his sister, Tracy. Tracy Nelson is a great pick for Boof. Right. First, her look is spot on. She's like flexibly pretty, which is a phrase I think I just coined here a little bit ago. Flexibly pretty. And what I mean by that is sunglasses and a bad haircut. She's the nerdy girl, right? Bad haircut, some glasses, and now she's a wallpaper, right? You fix the hair though and put her in an evening gown. She's striking. So, I mean, she's really a good Boof. Next, her resume is right where it needed to be for the part of Boof. By 1983, she had completed 20 episodes of Square Pegs. That show was a cult classic and a real critical darling, but no one watched it. Kind of like Freaks and Geeks, right? Same kind of thing. People loved it, but no one watched it. Also, it paired her up with future legends, Sarah Jessica Parker, Jamie Gertz, both of whom will come be discussed in later sections of this Boof whole thing here. Excuse me. So unrelated about Square Pegs. Rumor had it that Square Pegs was rampant with drug, sex, and partying. Crazy set, so look that up. But after Square Pegs, Tracy does a few TV spots and a movie. Guess what she does in 1984? That's right. The first of two appearances with Scott Howard himself on Family Ties. Even better, she plays a girl he likes. They have chemistry, right? So Tracy would go on to work steadily well into the 2020s. Her biggest role was Sister Steve on that Father Dowling Mysteries movie with Tom Bosley from the dad in Happy Days. But no one remembers Sister Steve, right? Everyone would remember Boof. We could have had decades of her being interviewed about her legendary grandparents and father, and I bet every one of those interviews would have included the phrase, "You remember her as Boof," in the 1985 classic Teen Wolf. What a wasted opportunity, because no one knows her as Sister Steve. They would have absolutely known her as Boof. She would have been a famous Boof. Oh, man. Okay. Next up in the Ethan Wayne Award, Tawny Welch, 1961 she was born. Daughter, of course, of Raquel Welch. Here's the good news. Tawny has a very famous last name. And she also had another hit movie in 1985, Cocoon, that would have boosted, I think, the marketing for Teen Wolf. Here's the bad news. She's too hot. Just too, straight up too fucking hot. Worse is she has a reputation for avoiding interviews because she does not like to talk about her famous mom. So yikes, right? Her career would basically descend mostly into B-movies after 1985 anyway. But if she'd only embraced discussing her famous mom, I think she could have been, you know, it could have been Senator Welch, Governor Welch, Boof, it wasn't enough time. Get it? Reference to Godfather? Anyway, I think had she been willing to talk about her mom more, she could have been a bigger star. Anyway, that's Tawny Welch. Next up, this is a good one. I'm proud of this one. Next up for the Ethan Wayne, Talia Balsam. Right? Born in 1959, you probably don't recognize the name, but I know you know her. She was the daughter of Martin Balsam and Joyce Van Patten. And ironically, I just watched the Martin Balsam movie last night. Isn't that funny? Death Wish 3. Martin Balsam is in Death Wish 3. Okay. There's lots to unpack here, though, with Talia. She's had a long, prolific career. Her second acting credit is the 3-episode arc on Happy Days, in which the Cunninghams go to Hollywood and watch Fonzie jump the shark. Wow, how about that for starting a career? I mean, right? She was literally in the episode of Fonzie jumping the shark, which, of course, is where the phrase comes from. She would have tons of TV guest spots in TV movies through the 70s and early 80s, including the pilot of Taxi, which I did a podcast once. I forget what podcast it was, where we discussed the pilot of Taxi. I should look that up. It was a good podcast. I enjoyed being on it. Anyway, in 1983, she plays an oversexed childhood friend of none other than Alex P. Keaton on Family Ties. So again, she's got chemistry with Michael J. Fox. Also in 84, she would start dating her future husband, George Clooney. So that's right. They were married from 1989 to 1993. Why people don't talk about this, I don't know. Because I feel like for decades, Clooney was known as a guy, oh, he'll never get married, never get married. Dude had already been married. No one ever talks about that. Everyone always talked about him as if he was like this confirmed bachelor. Sadly for her, she divorced him about a year before it became one of the biggest fucking stars in the world, which would have made a much sweeter divorce settlement. But anyway, I digress. By 84, she has a great resume. She has a working relationship with Michael J. Fox, like I said. She has a famous last name and a future superstar boyfriend in Clooney. This all makes for a good Boof. Her look worries me a bit. She's very attractive, but I've always found her intimidating. There's nothing innocent about her. In fact, she looks like she does not suffer fools. So I don't know. I find her intimidating. But a few tweaks to the character, she'd be a solid boof, right? The character, not the drug and the butt thing, right? Incidentally, she would later marry John Slattery and would play his wife that he ultimately divorced on one of the greatest TV shows of all time, Mad Men. So her legacy is solid. She would have been a fucking Mad Men and they could have been like, you know her as boof, but now she's in Mad Men. Damn, what a wasted opportunity. All right, got a couple more to discuss here. One more, actually. My last candidate for the Ethan Wayne Award goes to Jennifer Jason Leigh. Born in 1962, she's the daughter of Vic Morrow. Okay, I'm not sure this works the role of boof, right? But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Jennifer. Jennifer is talented, has a great look for boof. Also, she's tiny, which would do well next to like the diminutive Michael J. Fox, right? But there's a few strikes against her. Strike one, her Hollywood lineage. For those of you not in the know, her famous father was like violently killed on the set of the 1983 film Twilight Zone, the movie. Like really violently. Like fucking look it up. It's really bad. I'm guessing her pops was not going to be something that the Teen Wolf marketing machine was going to lean on heavily while promoting this movie, right? Strike two for Jennifer is that her career might have been a little too red hot by the casting of Teen Wolf. She's coming off of Fast Times at Ridgemont High in 82, Easy Money in 83. By 84, she's a leading woman. So I'm not sure that she's a boof, right? Strike three, and I don't want to come off as prudish or judgmental, but Jennifer Jason Leigh did some serious full frontal nudity in Fast Times, and I think it would be hard for her to be seen as a virginal high schooler 3 years after we fucking watched Mike Damone knock her up in the pool house, right? So I don't know. I don't think boof is in the cards for Jennifer. So the Ethan Wayne Award goes to, again, our candidates are Jennifer Jason Leigh, Talia Balsam, Tawny Welch, Tracy Nelson, and Tracy Reiner, and then, of course, Dee Dee Pfeiffer. The winner of the Ethan Wayne Award goes to Tracy Nelson. So congratulations, Tracy. We will see you in the finalist tournament. And that wraps up the Boof Conundrum Part 1. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'll be coming back in future episodes to talk about more Boof candidates, different categories, some diversity, some future Oscar winners, people from Michael J. Fox's personal life. You name it, I have wasted hours and hours and days and weeks of my life trying to solve the Boof Conundrum. So do me a favor, the least you can do for me is stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanatic.